Hi, sexy listeners. I know you have questions about sex, love, and relationships, and I'm here to help. I want to hear about what you're going through in your life, and I want to answer all of your questions about sex. So The Trouble with Sex has launched Ask Dr. Tammy. Go to thetroublewithsex.com and click on Ask Dr. Tammy to send me your questions. I'm going to answer them directly on the podcast or during my new Instagram Live events. Don't worry, we're going to keep your identity anonymous so you can be open and honest and ask me anything you want. Send your questions to thetroublewithsex.com, Ask Dr. Tammy. I'm here to give you advice, answer your questions, and help open your mind and your heart to help you improve your relationships and your sex life. Today's guest is Dr. Barry McCarthy. He's a professor of psychology at American University, a diplomat in clinical psychology, a diplomat in sex therapy, and a certified couples therapist. He's published more than 120 professional articles, 33 book chapters, and get this, 22 books. I mean, he's very impressive. His latest book is Rekindling Desire, Enhancing Couple Sexuality and Finding Your Sexual Voice. He's presented more than 450 professional workshops in the U.S. and all over the globe. In 2016, he received the Masters and Johnson Award for Lifetime Contributions to the Sexuality Field. He's also a visiting professor, faculty member at my Integrative Sex Therapy Institute. Welcome, Dr. Barry. Thank you so much for being here.
Right. I'm glad to be here and looking forward to it.
So, you know, I've heard you speak so many times now, and I've heard you teach, and you're one of the favorites at the Institute. And one of the things I know about you is that you know so much. You've been doing this for a long time, and you are just like a fire hose of information. Like, there's so much that you have to say. And the one thing that's really interesting is that you're so contemporary.
Right. I want to talk to people where they are now, not where they were 50 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You do.
And, you know, it does seem to me that one of the really tough issues is the approach that we now have about men and male sexuality. We make it very simple, wrong, but very simple. We say women are complex sexually, but men are not complex sexually. That is truly untrue. It is total BS. That one of the things that we do in terms of male sexuality is we either put men on a pedestal that says they're better sexually than women, that they're in control, that they have total control of the sexual scenario, that men are better than women sexually. And it's women's job to catch up to men. That's one extreme. And then the other extreme, I think, is to demonize men, to say all the sexual problems are caused by men. Rape, child sexual abuse, misuse of porn.
Affairs.
Those kind of things. Affairs. And also the idea that emotionally, men are Neanderthals.
Right.
That they're always behind. They're not good at therapy. That is unhealthy. It is scientifically and clinically untrue. That there are many more similarities and differences between adult men and women, and that life goes so much better when men and women look at each other as both intimate and erotic friends, instead of that traditional split that men are about eroticism, women are about intimacy. The idea that men are from Mars, women are from Venus. All of that is funny, gets a lot of publicity, and it's scientifically and clinically totally wrong.
So do you think that's the biggest trouble with sex today is that we're just, you know, so siloing male and female sexuality, and that's just so untrue, so unfair?
I think it's one of the major ones, but let me tell you what I think is the core one, and that is that this idea that the key to sex is control and eroticism. Rather than the new mantra, and this is a mantra that I believe in so strongly, and that is the new mantra. It goes for men and women, and that is desire, pleasure, eroticism, and satisfaction. That they've got to speak to each other through those lenses. And those are shared language and shared lenses. And the thing I most want to emphasize is deceased colleague Mike Metz's idea of good enough sex. that to me, good enough sex, GES, is the key for both men, women, couples, and the culture for staying sexual, not just in your young adult life, but in your adult life and your aging. I really am excited, this idea that you can be sexual in your 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Well, God, I hope so. Because I'm not going into that dark night easily.
Not into that dark night at all. It even made it into New England Journal of Medicine, a big scientific study. You can be sexual at least until 85. Now, I believe you can be sexual after 85, but it's scientifically at least 85.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Right. No, that's the notion. And the other notion, when I think about how I learned about sex, I think the way most men learn about sex, I was seeing one of my favorite one-liners. I would love to know if you know who came up with this line, Tammy. And that is, sexually, one size never fits all. That you've got to respect the mainstream and you've got to respect diversity and individual differences. But for most men, the great majority of men, they learn sex autonomously. In other words, he can feel desire. He can be aroused and spontaneous erection. He can have orgasm. And he can feel good about the sexual experience. And he doesn't need anything from his partner.
And he can do it by himself, alone.
He could do it by himself. But in couple sex, he can do it by himself, too. He doesn't need anything from his partner. And the notion is this, the essence of real sex. And that's what you see on porn videos, but you see that in the media and movies, that the man always has a spontaneous, predictable erection.
And so you're saying that that's not true?
It is not true.
It's not true.
It is total, complete BS. And the reason that couples stop being sexual, whether that's at 30 or at 75, is because the man, he doesn't want to stop being sexual, but he's lost his comfort and confidence with erections, intercourse, and orgasm.
The one quote I love from you that I say all the time is that men judge their sexuality by three things: the ability to get an erection upon demand, the capacity to keep it as long as they want, and the ability to ejaculate across the room, which I think they get from porn.
Right.
I love that.
Well, with porn, they ejaculate on a woman's body, especially her face. Right. But this notion that says what real sex is about is performance. Individual performance, and it's erections, and you go to intercourse on your first erection, you ejaculate, and you don't need anything from your partner. And that autonomous view is viewed, that's the real man.
Mm.
Now, I wish we had better science on this, but I really believe this. And that is, the great majority of men, probably over 90% of them, will have a sensitizing experience somewhere between 35 and 55. Now, it might happen at 18. It might not happen until 75.
Sensitizing, like, in a relationship?
No. Sensitizing meaning he is not able to get a spontaneous erection, go to intercourse on that spontaneous erection, and orgasm on his first erection. And the man panics when he has a sensitizing experience. He says, what is wrong with me? There's something really, really wrong with me. And he gets into this cycle. The old cycle, the healthy cycle, is positive anticipation, pleasure-oriented sex. It flows through high levels of eroticism. You go to intercourse and you ejaculate intravaginally. I love that kind of sex. I really do.
Who doesn't? Sounds good.
Who doesn't? Yeah. But the idea that that's the measure of masculinity, that that's the measure of male sexuality, and then the woman, if he doesn't do that, that means there's probably something wrong with her or something wrong with the relationship. Rather than understanding that that's a normal change with experience and with aging.
And how does that apply to, like, gay men and gay relationships?
It's, I think, even more difficult with gay men and gay relationships. Because generally in gay relationships, the emphasis has been on eroticism. The emphasis has been on breaking boundaries. It's been about exploring. It's about really letting go erotically. And it says that a real gay man always has predictable erections.
Mm.
And that is a terrible burden on gay men.
It's a lot of pressure.
So gay men are much more likely to use both pro-erection medications and penile injections than straight men are.
Oh, really?
Really, they are. I think there's good science to that.
Interesting.
But here's the other thing, Tammy. whether you're straight or gay, whether you're married or partnered, the essence of sex is it's an interpersonal process. It is not an autonomous individual process. And the essence of sex, whether you're 35, 45, or 75, is giving and receiving pleasure-oriented touching and stimulation. That's the key. And the notion of good enough sex is that it's a couple concept, not an individual performance concept. It's about pleasure, not about performance. And it's about sharing both desire, pleasure, and eroticism, that it's all about the sharing process. Now, if you accept that, you'll be sexual in your 60s, 70s, and 80s. If you cling to the old view of sex, you're going to stop somewhere between 50 and 65.
Interesting.
When couples stop, it's almost always the man's choice. It's a dumb choice. It's a really bad decision because he basically says to himself, he doesn't say it to his partner. He says, I don't want to start something I can't finish. I need totally predictable erections. Now, let me give you, if I can, my favorite hobby horse. And that is, I really believe that sexuality involves psychological factors, biomedical factors, social relational factors. It is complex for both the man, woman, and couple. But what happens, and what the ads tell us, the drug companies basically lie to us. They say, you can turn to Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, penile injections, testosterone enhancement as a standalone intervention. It is not a standalone intervention. That is a myth. What it's all about is about, again, sharing, and it's a couple experience. And most of the time, probably 85 to 95% of the time, especially among people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, you get into this thing of comfort, pleasure, arousal, eroticism, erotic flow, intercourse, and orgasm. Best kind of sex, mutual and synchronous sex. But when it doesn't flow, rather than panicking or apologizing, and there's nothing more anti-erotic than apologizing. You don't want to apologize sexually.
That's true.
What you want to do is you want to turn to your partner and say, either let's do a sensual scenario, let's do an erotic non-intercourse scenario, or let's take a rain check. And it can be synchronous. In other words, both of us really get into the erotic scenario. Or it can be asynchronous. It's better for him than her, better for her than him.
So what's another way, Barry, of saying, let's get into an erotic scenario? Like, what? How do like regular people say that?
I think regular people say, hey, let's have a good time sexually tonight, but it's not going to be an intercourse night. Let's really play with each other. Let's really get into this. Let's really have some fun.
Let's act out a fantasy. Let's do something, but it's not going to be penis and vagina or penis and anus sex.
Right. And I think you and I probably disagree about this, about erotic fantasies. I think most people use erotic, both men and women, use erotic fantasies during couple sex. It's normal. It's healthy. I think for many people, the way to really de-eroticize an erotic fantasy is to act it out. That often the fantasy works better in fantasy than it does in reality. Because by its nature, erotic fantasies are not socially desirable or acceptable.
I don't know if I disagree with you. I think that probably some fantasies are better left fantasy. And
right.
I think that if you act out some of your fantasies, they absolutely like lose their juice and you kind of move to something else. But sometimes it's fun.
Sometimes it is fun. It works for some couples and it works well. What you've got to figure out as a man and as a couple is what's the right fit for you. Can I give you my favorite negative story about erotic fantasy?
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me your favorite fantasy.
Let me give you my navigant negative one.
Okay.
This is a client. It's a really true story. He went to Vegas, and he's always used the erotic fantasy of three women fighting to fellate him. And he
paid him a blowjob.
Three women blowjob, right.
Yeah.
So he gave each woman $1,000 and said, who's going to do the best blowjob? He said it was the worst. It was a waste of $3,000. He said it was the worst sexual experience I've ever had in my whole life.
Why? Did they like bite him? What had happened?
No, I think what makes the fantasy work is that it's, you have control of it. It's in your head. playing it out made him very self-conscious.
Mm.
He had a hard time reaching, he had a hard time keeping his erection, he had a hard time reaching orgasm. And it robbed this famous erotic fantasy of its pull.
Interesting.
And that's a mistake.
Interesting.
But what I think is true, see, I am always, let me be positive first and then the caveat. The best sex is mutual and synchronous. In other words, both you and your partner feel high levels of desire, pleasure, eroticism, and satisfaction. It is clearly the best sex.
But you don't have to have a synchronous orgasm, though. This orgasm at the same time thing is no good.
That's a perfect example of unrealistic performance demands. I heard that again, that was supposed to be the height. It isn't the height.
No, it's ridiculous.
And my experience of simultaneous orgasms is it's a disappointment. It isn't as good as it's supposed to be.
Well, you can't watch your partner have an orgasm. It's kind of like a wasted opportunity.
It's a wasted orgasm. Orgasm by its nature is a very personal experience. And it's really good to have orgasm. And you want to celebrate your own orgasm and your partner's orgasm. But don't burden it with unrealistic performance demands.
I think we're going to use that as a quote in the show notes. That's very good. The doctor says it's okay to not have simultaneous orgasms. That's unrealistic.
It's not only okay, it's normal and healthy to not have simultaneous. People who have synchronous sex do not have simultaneous orgasms. That's a good quote. But you know, most sex experiences for most couples are positive, but they're asynchronous.
Let's just stop, Barry. I'm going to stop you. What do you mean synchronous, asynchronous? Because our listeners are probably going, okay, I want synchronous. I don't want synchronous. Like, what does that mean?
No, you do want synchronous. Synchronous means both of you, whether you're, again, married, partner, straight, or gay, both of you have high levels of desire, high levels of pleasure, high levels of eroticism, and high levels of satisfaction. That's the best kind of sex.
That's the goal.
That's a good, realistic, positive, realistic hope. Now, when I say most sex is asynchronous, it doesn't mean it's not positive. The great majority of sexual experiences are positive for both partners. But asynchronous means it's better for you than your partner. And that's okay. And if you look at young couples, let's say less than 40, most of the time, can never say all the time for men and women, that's just nonsense. The line, sexually one size doesn't fit all, is one of my favorite lines. But usually it's better for the man than the woman, traditionally. But if you look at folks 65 or older, you get this really interesting gender reversal. And that is usually the asynchronous sex is better for the woman than the man.
What happens between 40 and 65?
I think it becomes more variable and flexible.
Okay.
One of the reasons that I am so in favor, not just of my age, but I'm so in favor of sexuality after 40 or after 60, is that your satisfaction goes up, not down. The sexual performance might not be as reliable, but your satisfaction goes up. And the reason it goes up, again, this ties to good enough sex, is that you know you've beaten the odds. You embrace sex, which is more variable and flexible. And that's good enough sex is the key to staying sexual in your 60s, 70s, and 80s. And the key for the man is to learn to piggyback his arousal on her arousal.
Meaning, how do you do that?
How do you do that?
Like, you get turned on when she's turned on? Isn't that sort of common?
The more turned on she is, the more turned on you are.
Right.
In terms of partner interaction arousal. It really does play. It's like Sue Johnson has a line about dancing tangos. It's like dancing tango with somebody who's really into dancing tango. That the two of you dancing together sexually makes the experience much better. I think the other thing that is different with men in terms of good enough sex is that the man likes the idea that he's the wise man rather than a traditional man. But my experience, especially with men, is they like the idea that they've beaten the odds. You know, let me give you the good news again is you can be sexual to at least 85. The bad news is about one out of three couples give up sex between 60 and 65, and two out of three between 70 and 75. And not for good reasons. It isn't a good decision. It's one of the worst decisions they make. They become the grumpy old man stereotype. You You don't want to be a grumpy old man. You want to be a pro-sexual man. You want to look at your partner as your intimate erotic friend. And you want to understand that sex is more genuine and more human as you age. The reason he gives up is he feels that he cannot perform the way a real man performs. And the way a real man performs is totally power, total predictability, total erections.
So
rather than the partner.
So let me ask you two questions. One is, what do you do when you feel like there's no desire or your desire is really low as you age? And, you know, if both partners are low desire, like, you know, if you're one partner, like she has a lot of arousal, so you can kind of get turned on and that's a common like turn on, that's great. But what if like neither of them have a lot of desire? And the other question is, what happens when like the Viagra doesn't work? You know, you can go to that shift where I love what you said, like, let's just have like a non-intercourse night or a night that's not focused around my hard penis, which is great. But, you know, what happens when people get like discouraged about it? Like, I've tried this, I've tried that, it's not going to work. And now we stopped. And what do you recommend?
Let me start off with Viagra. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go from Viagra to desire. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So what happens with Viagra is that the man goes by himself to the internist or the urologist, or he goes on the internet, mm-hmm. and he gets Viagra. He doesn't talk to his partner about it. He doesn't read anything about it. But what he hopes is that he'll get the results of the ads. And that is, you will get autonomous erections, spontaneous erections again, and you will function autonomously. In my humble opinion, I'm an old clinician, right? But in my humble opinion, nobody gets the results in the ads. Everybody is a Viagra failure based on the ads. Mm. Now, what I really believe is that the first thing you do is you don't turn to a biomedical intervention as a standalone. You say to your partner, we need to rebuild comfort and confidence with erections and intercourse. I need you to be my intimate neurotic ally. If we're going to go to a physician, let's go together, or at least read the stuff together. And let's have realistic expectations. And the realistic expectation is the name of the game with good enough sex. And that is 85% of sexual encounters will flow to intercourse. And that's the best sex. We're going to love it. But when it doesn't flow to intercourse, where that happens once a month or once a year, we're not going to panic. We're not going to apologize. We're going to turn toward each other and we're going to have a good time sexually. Whether that's a sensual time, an erotic time for both of us or for one of us, we're going to have a good time sexually. We're asking a medication to do more than it can do. We're asking it to be a standalone intervention. And you know, in every other thing with medicine, diabetes, heart disease, pain, nobody asks it to be a standalone intervention. It's only sex that we ask it to be a standalone, rather than integrate it into our couple sexual style of intimacy, pleasuring, and eroticism. You know, the major reason men actually fail at Viagra, and I really believe this, and that is, as soon as he gets erect, so his subjective arousal is still low, 4 or 5, he immediately rushes to intercourse because he's afraid of losing his erection. That one of the most valuable things is, don't transition to intercourse until you're really turned on, till your subjective arousal ideally is an 8 or 7 on this 10-point scale. And the other thing that I believe really helps is have the woman initiate intercourse and guide information. So it allows him to stay involved in the pleasuring and eroticism process rather than get distracted by fears about his penis.
Mm-hmm. And that says it all. Don't get distracted by fears about your penis. And we'll be right back. Sexy listeners, we know you're out there, but we want to know more about you. And we want to know about your relationships and your concerns about sex. If you want to spare just a couple minutes, take our listener survey at the troublewithsex.com homepage. Click on the survey link and just type in your email. So please visit the troublewithsex.com right now to take our survey. We have a question from a listener, and it says, it's from Bob. My partner has issues with depression and has been under a lot of stress at work during the pandemic. He doesn't seem to have any desire right now, and we haven't had sex for over a month. Can you talk about how your mental state affects male desire and sex? Thanks, Bob.
Right. I mean, the major sex organ is your brain. Mm. And when you're depressed or you're stressed, you're turned off, you don't get spontaneous erections. Again, whether you're partnered or whether you're gay or straight. The name of the game is to change how you define desire. The way we always define desire, men define desire, was spontaneous erections. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm in favor of spontaneous erections.
Mm-hmm, me
whether
too.
Whether you're 20 or you're 60.
Love them. They're great.
But in fact, the name of the game is called responsive sexual desire. Now, that was developed with women who are much more likely to complain about desire problems. But it's very relevant to men and is relevant for straight and gay men, 40-year-old and 7-year-old men.
And that's really what you were talking about in the beginning, that it's not just about women, that we have this misunderstanding about women and desire and sexuality. And, you know, we sort of understand that women can have responsive desire, but you're saying, no, it's true for men too.
That's exactly right. And good enough sex sells so much better with women than it does with men, because it fits their sexual socialization and it fits their lived experiences. It doesn't fit as well for men. And also, men don't get the support that women get. Women get support from therapists, from their gynecologists, from their female friends. The good enough sex never sells with male drug representatives, male physicians, or their friends. The idea of real men don't need anything. That's absolute nonsense. That the notion of responsive desire is you can start at zero. You can start at neutral. And as you touch and are touched, especially sensual and playful touch, and then you're aware of your own feelings and your partner's feelings, that's when you experience desire. And so that is very important, and especially with aging, but it's also true for younger men, whether straight or gay. Now, I think the thing that is important for the man is that he's got to be able to see this as being a first-class sexual man, not a wimp, not that he's not good enough. You know, my favorite piece of data about men is 85% of them believe their penis is smaller than average.
So
that doesn't
true.
Make any sense at all. Statistically, empirically, anything.
No.
But it's always about I'm not good enough. And the message is good enough sex is first class male and couple sexuality. And at good enough sex says sex isn't just about erections and intercourse. It's about sensual touch. It's about playful touch. It's about erotic non-intercourse touch and intercourse. But stop this notion that says it's intercourse or nothing. For so many men, intercourse or nothing is the way that they've learned about sex.
And they want to be the best at it. They want to have the biggest penis, the hardest penis. They want to last the longest. They don't want to come too soon. They want to, you know, make her have triple orgasms. They want to make her squirt across the room. Like, you know,
right.
So competitive in their mind, whether they're competing in their minds or with, you know, something they saw on porn. Or
they're comparing what they've seen on porn, but they're comparing what their male friends say.
Mm-hmm.
Men exaggerate and lie about sex. They shouldn't, but they do.
So
now,
true.
I'm very pro-male, and I'm very pro-sex and pro-couples. But the fact is, you really are not a genuine, real, authentic man unless you can turn towards your partner and talk about your anxiety and vulnerabilities, not just your strengths. And that is not genuinely accepted among male peers, but it is the key to being sexual. You know, when I do my presentations in person to real clinicians, invariably an older male clinician will walk up to me and turn me aside and he says, you know, that's a good presentation. I like the idea of good enough sex, but that doesn't apply to people like you and me. You and I, we have total control and predictability. And I said, I don't have total control and predictability. I am a real first-class man and I believe theoretically, clinically, and personally in good enough sex. And it works so much better being 77 now, which is my age. But I said that when I was in my 50s, and I mean it. Mm-hmm. I truly mean it.
Mm-hmm.
That the key to a healthy male sexuality is a pleasure orientation, is thinking about your partners, your intimate and erotic friend or ally, and it's all about self-acceptance first and then partner acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that men never believe is it's okay to have lousy sex. Even among the best sexual couples, 5 to 15% of encounters are mediocre, dissatisfying, or dysfunctional. That's okay. It doesn't make you less of a man. It makes you a more realistic, genuine man.
I really love that. It's okay to have lousy sex.
Again, I'm not in favor of lousy sex. Can I tell my Bill Masters story to your group,
sure,
to your audience?
Sure.
You know, I saw him at a 2-day workshop when I was in my 30s.
From Masters and Johnson, right?
Right. I mean, Bill Masters did a 2-day workshop in Philly, and I went to it. And by the afternoon of the second day, I finally got the courage to walk up to him. And I walked up to him with an article about erections. He was a very outspoken man. He looked at the article, and he threw it into a wastepaper basket. He says, "That's lousy science." And then he turned to me. Now in my 30s. And he turned to me and said, "Do you know how you're sure that a man is cured of erectile dysfunction?" It's like God speaking to this young psychologist. and I said, "No, tell me." They said, "Whether it happens once a month or once a year, when you don't have an erection sufficient for intercourse and you don't panic, you know you're cured."
Mm.
To me, that makes good sense.
Yeah, so it's the panic and the anxiety that really is the main symptom. It's not the penis.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And if most women identify with that because they say to themselves that that's my experience. I'm not an autonomous functioner. I'm not 100% functioner. It's okay sometimes to go along for the ride. It's okay sometimes to just not get into it. It's not okay for men, and it needs to be okay for men.
So let me see if I got all this. So number one, we're talking about penis acceptance. Whether it's hard or not, it's okay. It's okay to start sex when you're not feeling a lot of desire, that you can start at any level.
Responsive desire.
Right? And it's okay to have lousy sex sometimes. It's not going to ruin you. And it's not going to ruin sex for you. And that, you know, good enough sex means just what it sounds like, that you can have an intimate and erotic experience and it doesn't have to be a blow your socks off experience every time.
That's right. And that basically you think of it as a couple process, not an individual performance. And the essence is about acceptance and pleasure, not about a contingent sexual self-esteem and performance.
So I have one more question for you. You know, I find this so interesting about women, like, women always think it's their fault if their partner can't get an erection or can't keep an erection. They never ask me, though, you know, if their partner has premature ejaculation, they never say, "Oh my God, he's so hot for me. He just can't control himself." But if he can't keep an erection, they always think, "Oh my God, he's not hot for me. He can't keep his erection." So how do you work with women around that so that they don't feel like, "Oh my God, this is my fault"?
Basically, what you're saying to the woman is that you want to be present as his intimate neurotic ally, whether it's premature ejaculation, it's ejaculatory inhibition, it's erectile dysfunction. He doesn't have to perform for you, but you want him to turn towards you. You know what's a really good example of this in terms of the erect? Well, let's do premature ejaculation first. You know, it is the most common male sexual problem, but 20 to 25% of adult men feel that they ejaculate before they want to. But I think the best definition of premature ejaculation is intercourse lasting less than 2 minutes and you don't have control of when you ejaculate. It isn't about going for an hour or half an hour. No, the average couple, and this is important information, their intercourse experience is between 3 minutes and 9 minutes. Their whole lovemaking sexual experience is between 15 minutes and 45 minutes. So you want a broader view about what sex is. In terms of good enough sex, even people who learn good ejaculatory control, about 15% of the time they're going to ejaculate early. That's okay. It's nothing bad's going to happen. One of the reasons for most people, and again, most doesn't mean everybody, that I think Cialis works better than Viagra is because it's easier to integrate it into the couple's sexual style. You get this half an hour window of opportunity to be sexual. And I think that makes it easier. But even with the best medication, it can't be a standalone. That one of the things that you need to be, you know, I remember one couple where the way the woman dealt with when he lost his erection is she tickled him. Because he would always apologize and panic and get tearful. and she tickled me. You can't be laughing and apologizing at the same time.
So how do you convince her that it's not her fault? Do you like just say, look, don't take this on. It's not your fault. Like, how do we comfort the female side or the male side if it's a gay couple?
Yeah. I mean, it's this 1-2 combination. And again, it sounds so easy when you say it on a podcast. It's harder to do in people's real lives. And that is, you're responsible for your own sexuality. You're responsible for your own desire, your own pleasure, your own eroticism, and your own satisfaction. Your partner doesn't give it to him. It isn't a measure. It is not a test of your partner. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, sex is a team sport. Mm-hmm. And you want her to say, I value touching, I value intimacy, I value pleasuring, I value eroticism, I value orgasm. I want to be your friend in this, and I want you to be my friend. And the most unfriendly thing you do is you say nothing and turn away from me.
Mm. And that's true for both of them, right?
That's true for both of them, mm-hmm. and it's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want them to get good. You know, when I see couples, and I no longer am a clinician, but when I saw couples for 42 years, I would not terminate treatment until they'd had at least one negative experience.
Oh, interesting. So you can teach them to stay connected even though they have the negative experience.
Right.
Yeah.
That a negative experience is not the end of the world. That no apologizing, no panicking, turn toward each other, whether in intimate ways, sensual ways, playful ways, erotic ways, whether it's mutual. That means my mutual means synchronous, or it's asynchronous.
And that's such a good lesson for life, Barry. You know, like even when there's a negative experience, if you can turn towards each other instead of turning away, that's like the whole key to a positive relationship. I mean, that's like wisdom from Barry McCarthy right there. Like I'm capturing that. I don't know where we go from there.
No, I think that's right. I think that the notion that says, do I think of you as my intimate erotic friend? Because it breaks the old learning. In the old learning, men were about eroticism and women were about intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
In the old learning for gay men, it was all about eroticism.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about healthy sexuality, most of the time, it integrates intimacy, pleasuring, and eroticism. That's the healthiest kind of sex. And put that with good enough sex expectations. Good enough sex really is a positive concept. But when something goes wrong, it isn't the end of the world.
So, Barry, what's one last piece of advice you can leave our listeners with?
This idea of accepting male sexuality as complex.
Mm.
It's just as complex as female sexuality. It is a challenge for the man, the woman, the couple, and the culture. I think the culture really does bad when it either demonizes men or puts them on a pedestal. This idea that there's many more similarities and differences, especially among adults.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really helps people.
Thank you. That's really good. And that we can have sex well into our 80s, which is very good news. And it's okay to have not so great sex. And it's okay to start sex even when you're not into it, that you can respond to sex, and he doesn't have to perform for you. I really like that too. So wisdom from Dr. Barry McCarthy today when we're talking about good enough sex, men and sex, penis acceptance, and being an intimate and erotic friend. Barry, how do they find you and find out how to get your books? Where can people find you?
The best place is Amazon. The best book for people with desire problems is the third edition of Rekindling Desire.
Great book.
The best book for couples generally about sex that don't have to have problems is a book called Enhancing Couple Sexuality. And then in 2021, we're going to have a book out called Contemporary Male Sexuality.
Great.
Which is hopefully going to be helpful.
Oh, that's going to be the future classic. Thank you, Barry, again, for being with us here today at The Trouble with Sex and for schooling all of our listeners. Such important information. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all my sexy listeners. This is Dr. Tammy. Until next time. Have a question about your relationship, your sex life, or sexual wellness? Visit thetroublewithsex.com and click on Ask Dr. Tammy to send me your question. For sex positive tips, live events, and updates, join my mailing list and follow us at The Trouble with Sex on Instagram. The Trouble with Sex is produced by Brandy Savitt and Jane Applegate. Our audio is designed by Flavor Lab, New York City. This episode was engineered by Kevin Jarvis at Sonic Boom Room in Venice, California, and mixed by JC Chow. Music by Bruce Hirschfield.